This is Open Run.
Not bad.
Nailed it. Love it.
Okay, welcome back to Open Run. I know what you're thinking. Why am I hearing Stefan's voice just 48 hours after the epic, nonstop All-Star Weekend recap that we delivered just a couple days ago? And that's because we don't stop. Generosity, Tunde. Giving. We're givers. This is Stefan, and I've got Tunde on the line. How are you this bright and sunny morning?
I am doing good. This is Hoops for Breakfast, man. That's what this episode is. Hoops for Breakfast. Super early on my side of things. And I'm just gonna try and come in here and, you know, fill the shoes of your last guest, Draymond Green. And that's a big pair of shoes to fill. So,
Oh, it's a lot. But I mean, I think you're up for it. I heard, you know, I did some investigating. I heard, you know, the kind of pre-dawn hours is the best time to catch you. You're very much an early bird gets the worm kind of guy.
Not by choice. It might be the only time, but I'm excited, you know, as always. And people, first time listeners might not know, I'm uninterrupted family and I help produce the show. And so it's always good when I have a chance to actually get on and give hot takes. So I might be more Black Panther hot takes than I am NBA hot takes right now, but either or, I'm ready.
Well, okay. Well, you know me, I'm always interested in drawing parallels, so we're going to get there. The first thing I want to say is, so last night, my partner in crime, Jesse Williams, is likely, you know, in the air somewhere right now, I think. I was just with him last night here in New York. After spending a lot of serious time in LA for All-Star, we got to hang out last night because he was throwing a game night for his app, Liberty. And he had done some events for it, some press for it during the day, and then did a game night last night. So we were over at the 4040 Club. And, you know, they also have a bunch of TVs there. It's also like a sports bar. And I couldn't help but notice when I ducked out for a minute that the Cavs-Wizards game was playing out in a way I would not have predicted. Just last episode, we're talking about how going into All-Star break, LeBron basically seemed to be saying the only thing that would slow him down was the All-Star break itself. They were rolling, new team clicking. Of course, there are going to be some hiccups, but a John Wall-less Wizards does not seem like the squad that would, you know, be a reality check for the Cavs. But in the end, the Wizards do beat the Cavs 110-103. Did you catch any of that? Do you have any thoughts on, basically, do we need to read anything into this?
Well, I'll start here. First of all, how many episodes of Open Run do I have to produce to get invited to these parties you and Stefan are at? Or these events? You and Jesse, right? We had All-Star Weekend. I know there's a lot of events going on during All-Star Weekend. I didn't hear a peep from you or Jesse. Like, hey, CD, Tunde, come hang with us. So just let me know how many episodes I have to produce, and I'll make that happen, right?
You know, All-Star Weekend, everything moves so fast. I can't even keep track of what's going on.
Yeah, I know. I hear you, man. But, yeah, just quickly on this game. I don't think that, you know, you can really look into this one game in particular. However, though, I'm also in the school of thought that we shouldn't have looked into the, you know, the two or three games prior to the All-Star break.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, really drawn a ton of conclusions from that. I mean, obviously, there was a high. There was the post-trade glow to the entire team. You know, guys like JR saying, hey, we have a fucking squad now. It's like, mm-hmm. It's funny to me when you hear JR saying that because, I mean, JR, you very much easily could have been one of those guys traded. It just shook out that area that you weren't. So, I mean, it was all good. It was all fun. But, you know, I think everyone in national media, NBA Twitter got on there. Like, oh, the Cavs are back. I'm not saying they're not back, but we're not going to know in two or three games. In the same way, we're also not going to know here just in this one loss at home. Not a great loss. Not only did it not have John Wall, Bradley Beal, who obviously an all-star and who, by the way, had great things to say about LeBron, being on Team LeBron during the All-Star break. It's so amazing to see when these professional stars in their own right, which Bradley Beal officially is now, talk about the other stars in their lane that they're amazed by. I've seen Bradley Beal work out in person before here in L.A., go through some skills work with his skills coach Drew Hanlon, and I know the work he puts in. So for him to be absolutely flawed and admire LeBron, seeing him up close and personal, seeing the work LeBron puts in is amazing to me just as a fan. Myself, but going back to the game. So it was a surprise that, you know, the Cavs didn't capitalize not only on the lack of John Wall, but also on the lack of Bradley Beal having a big game. So it was still the leading scorer with 18 points, 9 assists, but it wasn't like the, you know, they didn't get beat by a 40-point Bradley Beal game, which is more than capable of. So just something to keep an eye out for. Ultimately, we can talk about the Cavs at length, but my old question, when everyone was piping up, like, you know, the new Cavs team, it all boils down to, are they better equipped to beat the Warriors? And I don't know. I don't know if they're better equipped to beat the Warriors, but we can get into that later.
Well, I mean, in terms of the Wizards, you look at the box score, you've got like five guys in double figures. And there's all this talk about, you know, like what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. It's like the absence of John Wall has forced them to try to kind of unlock some new, you know, gears. And yeah. I don't know if that's a mixed metaphor, but run with me, people. And, you know, Otto Porter's got 15, Beal at 18, Satoransky 17, Oubre 17, Meeks 10.
Oubre 17, that's right.
Yo, right? And it's like, it's a nice thing to see. I'm sure Brooks as a coach is like, wow, this is what happens when the star's out. Now, I was not believing, even last night, watching the closing moments on TV, at the bar, and I've got a friend telling me, like, see, without John Wall, they're moving the ball. It's like, yeah, I am not buying the Wizards are better without John Wall. It's absurd. I just think that they're responding well to, you know, a crisis, honestly.
Yeah.
And yeah,
you find, sorry to cut you off, my bad, but you find, you know, other aspects of your game. Like you said, through necessity, it's like, okay, John Wall's out, so next man up, right? And you'll find other aspects of the game that worked out. It's the same way how Steph went out earlier this season for the Warriors, and then you have other guys step up. And that's good in the long run for the entire team. And I think that's what
Absolutely.
The Wizards are going through right now. But no, it's just fascinating. I will say this quickly about the Cavs, though. I think they're still in the position where they're figuring out their lineup. You know, the trade happened, so Tyronn Lue didn't want to switch up the starting lineup too much. Obviously, Kevin Love is out. But he's rolling with, I don't know how to say his name, but I think it's Cedric Osman, the Turkish player.
I think they say Jetty.
It's a Jetty. There we go. Jetty. It's
pronounced. So. Yeah.
It's like Jedi, good. But it's Jedi, I want to say. Like, maybe I'm just making this up and trying to bring in Star Wars parallels into this. But
It's there.
Yeah. So, you know, he's still starting. And I almost feel like, are they going to go with Larry Nance Jr. pretty soon, who, by the way, is going to be wearing his father's number 22 jersey, which is retired in Cleveland.
I know, it's so bad.
Awesome story. So awesome story there. But I think Cavs still figuring some stuff out, and obviously once you get Kevin Love back overall, they're going to be better and good to go. Again, the Cavs season all boils down to one thing. Can they beat the Warriors? And I don't know. I don't think so. So
Did you see Chuck on TNT was saying that he, like, adamantly saying he thinks the Warriors are not a lock to win. And everyone's giving him hell about it.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, granted, though, Chuck was super late to the bandwagon in terms of the Warriors and whatnot in the last few years. So you got to always take what he says with a grain of salt.
I respect it. I love it.
And, you know, there it's definitely not as much of a lock as it was in the previous years. And it's twofold, right? There's one about the general disease of Moore. And I believe that's the Pat Riley phrase, right? When you win a couple of championships, it gets harder and harder to, you know, have that hunger because everybody out there individually wants more. I'm not exactly saying that's what's happening with the Warriors right now, but there's also this lethargic nature of things. So having won, having been at the top of the conference, I mean, this would be their fourth straight finals. We saw what happened with the Big Three Miami Heat, the last team that was, I guess, this super of a team, when they made it to the fourth straight final and against the Spurs, and they just absolutely burned out. One, the Spurs were absolutely masterful that year, but the Cavs, the Heat at the time were just burned out from the grind of an 82-game season all the way through the finals for four straight seasons. I think part of what the Warriors are doing right now is trying to make sure that doesn't happen to them. So
right,
it's all pacing,
right.
And I think once they lock in, once they're focused, I think they're the clear favorites, even though I love what the Rockets are doing, actually being pretty good and respectable on defense now. I just feel like once the Warriors lock in and they're focused, which they will become final, 20 games of the season going to the playoffs, I think it'd be fine.
I mean, it's really hard to bet against that team, obviously. The more interesting debate right now might be the East. And granted, yeah, with one loss, I guess people can start worrying about the Cavs. But realistically, re-energize LeBron, a re-energized like squad in general makes them really daunting. It's incredible the Celtics have done what they have without Hayward this whole time. If Hayward were in the conversation, this would be a whole other story. So we're going to next season, there's another tale to tell. But I do want to just get into a little item that I saw this morning that I really liked. We're talking about LeBron. There's a LeBron-related story that I thought you'd enjoy that maybe you've seen going around this AM. Donovan Mitchell, the man who Tunde thinks may, in fact, win Rookie of the Year because he gets so many buckets. And we'll talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. Do you know Donovan Mitchell was in the audience for the decision?
That is this is breaking news. This is the first time in Oklahoma history. Like, this is legitimately breaking news.
Donovan Mitchell was attending Greenwich Country Day in Connecticut. And he was a huge LeBron fan. He was a sixth grader. And he goes he forced his mom to let him go to the Boys and Girls Club in Greenwich because, as you may or may not know, the proceeds from profits from the decision were donated to the Boys and Girls Club by LeBron.
Yep.
Anyway, all these people in the crowd were Knicks fans. Here's what Donovan said. He said, I wanted him to go to Miami. I wanted him to get his first ring. The people there who were Knicks fans, they weren't too happy about it. That's what Mitchell said. I almost got hit in the head with a Snapple bottle because they were just throwing stuff around outside. It was cool. I was just celebrating. So it was pretty cool. Wow. And that's from Yahoo's, that's from Dan Devine. Divine Devine at Yahoo Sports.
Yeah. Wow.
But isn't that beautiful? And now he's on the court with him. And it also makes me think about the fact that, you know, if all goes well, LeBron will one day be on the court with his own son. It's just these generational, players. It's just his greatness is spanning time.
It's insane. It's insane. And that's, I think LeBron has kind of joked about that before. Like, obviously playing with
He's alluded to it.
So if he wants to do it, it's easily there. Like, LeBron is going to be at this level of basketball for confirmed. I can say we can be comfortable with his work ethic and how he takes care of his body, how locked in he is. I can say he's definitely at this level of play for definitely the next two seasons at this level of play. And then after that, maybe he dips a little, right? Because Father Time, as we know, is undefeated. Maybe he dips a little, but he's still going to be, he can easily still be a 23-8-8 guy, still an all-star. He can hang around until his son is ready to go. I think the bigger question, and this is why I don't like talking about the future of kids, and especially athletes' kids, great athletes' kids, it's so tough. It's so tough to get to that level that, your parents got to. I don't want to put that pressure on you.
The pressure is too insane. It's like, it seems like, it seems like, look, I'm optimistic, but I too don't like the idea of the weight kids have to carry because of like the torch you're supposed to carry. But, but just in a fun way, that would be lovely.
In a fun way.
Yeah. But so, okay. I know that you.
I mean, let's go back really super, super duper quick, though. Like, we just, the Carter Effect, which is just premiered, and check it out on interrupted.com, by the way, shameless plug.
No, that was come based on, it's on worth dunk it. Contest.
I know, right? That was based on the dunk contest, the Vince Carter dunk contest. That was 18 years ago.
Well, Vince Carter is the model to go by. He's 40, right? Yeah, in seven years, LeBron is 40, the junior's 20. It's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Vince Carter's narrative is so interesting because
I feel like, by the way,
he's 41 now. Oh my God. I forgot. But no, the Carter Effect, I feel like the timing could not be better because it's an interesting he's writing such an interesting coda to his career because my sense of his narrative was explosive star, like what could have been athletically mind blowing, game changing. In terms of postseason, it's kind of a what could have been story, if certain shots fell, if certain, teammates aligned, etc. Then there's this talk of, is he a Hall of Famer? And you see all the scuttlebutt with that. Then you blink and like five more years go by and he's still a productive player in the league. So he's still writing his story in ways that like I just would never have predicted. And it's just cool that now there is a new narrative about him that, you know.
We could talk about Vince Carter for the entirety of this episode. I mean, obviously, which again will sync up to the Carter effect, which you can check out on uninterrupted.com. You should go do that right now.
Sincerely, by the way, I just want to interject and say, like, there are shameless plugs, and then there's things you should just go and watch. Yes. And
totally.
Both.
Totally. So I got a chance to watch it just recently, and it's amazing, right? It's absolutely amazing. Vince was one of my favorite players growing up. He filled that void, you know, once, you know, MJ was, you know, about to hang him up or just hung him up. And he was coming from North Carolina, 6'6 shooting guard, bald head, crazy hops. And so I was ready to fully jump on that bandwagon tonight for a good amount of time. I was like everybody was back then. So he doesn't have a fascinating career to me because watching the doc and just looking back at his career, right? You can almost easily draw like a line where you can tell like he stopped ascending. And that was game 7 against the Sixers where he went to
the shot just barely didn't fall. Yeah,
exactly. Right? Exactly. So he goes to his graduation, shows up a couple of hours before, you know, before tip off. There's, you know, apparently some teammates are, you know, yapping about him not being there earlier for, you know, such a big game. I mean, this is the second round of the Eastern Conference. This is no joke. This is going up against, I think this is AI's MVP year. I believe so. So it was him versus AI, game 7, on the road in Philly, comes down to the last shot, and it just goes back iron. So I feel like he was never the same after that, definitely not in Toronto. And, you know, there was no better iteration of Vince Carter than earlier Toronto. So I think you can easily say he was a different player after that shot, you know, right there, right then. But then he has this second act of his career where he gets traded quite a bunch, is from team to team. The New Jersey years are pretty good, right? Like he had that one dunk Alonzo Mourning, which I still think is one of the best in-game dunks of all time. You know, they did some things there, in New Jersey. But then this third act of his career, or maybe even a fourth act, is fascinating to see. Like a guy who was a superstar could have had that ego. How many times do you see these guys just hang it up? Either they don't realize early enough that they're old and they can't do it anymore, and then, you know, they force their way into games, and then they have to almost shamelessly hang it up. Vince is kind of like taking that role on. Yeah, I'm a vet. Yeah, I'm only get 10, 15 minutes a game. And by the way, I'm not going to just chase a ring. Like, I'm going to go play. He's in Sacramento right now. Would have loved to see him go to like a San Antonio or all Golden State so he can end his career with that nice ring to it, no pun intended. But he's a fascinating career to me because of what he's been able to do now, later on in his career. It's almost, we never see the superstar have a career, this longevity in this sort of way. We never see that happen.
Well, right. Well, typically the explosive players explode their way out of their career. Like if you're that explosive, that athletic, something happens, an injury, you just get spent. And to be able to find a second act, like, I mean, when I think of high flyers from my experience as a fan, I was always amazed that after LJ had to.
I thought you were about to say high flyers from your experience. I was like, whoa.
No. From my viewing experience, LJ segueing out of, from when LJ was grandmama into being like this kind of post and threes guy. Like, you know, when you're a talented player, you find new ways. But I want to talk about, talking about high flyers, by the way, but we were talking about Donovan Mitchell earlier, and I want to revisit, you've made the argument, so rookie of the year. I feel like you're talking about how the voters are not as, they're maybe more storyline driven, more flash driven than they are nuts and bolts driven. So Ben Simmons, when you look at his numbers, to me, that's rookie of the year. To most people, I think, or to a lot of fans, rookie of the year. Donovan Mitchell, after winning the dunk contest, did not hurt his case because Donovan Mitchell has kind of taken the storyline. He's emerging as the second wave rookie of the year favorite. Just like you're saying, getting buckets like crazy, taking over games. This dunk contest to roll up to All-Star Weekend as a rookie and win the dunk contest is so stirring. Are you doubling down on him as rookie of the year?
Donovan Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay, so initially, I'm a big Ben Simmons guy. So overall, I was like, I mean, before Ben got into the league, I'm like, oh, this guy's rookie of the year, you know.
Oh, yeah, you said that, yeah.
So I'm all about, but then you start seeing, I didn't anticipate a rookie dropping multiple 40-point games. So that was kind of like, well, you know, we didn't see that coming. And I don't think there's any way you can see that coming. And I just think the Rookie of the Year award in general, it does tend to skew towards, you know, you don't necessarily care about team wins. It tends to skew towards more stats. And then the sexiest stat, as we all know, is points, because people love getting buckets. So I think Donovan Mitchell has definitely made it a tight race, and it's up for grabs. I think it all depends on how these guys all finish up the season. All that being said, I don't know if you saw what Ben Simmons did on Thursday night coming off the All-Star break, which, by the way, I know for a fact that Ben Simmons feels like he should have been in that game. I mean, he let people know as well on social. Mm-hmm. He always had mm-hmm. snarky comments when Andre Drummond got picked ahead of him, Kemba, this, that, and the other. He definitely feels like he should have been in the game. I understand why he wasn't, because you never let rookies into that game unless it's absolutely necessary, right? The only rookies that have made it, Blake Griffin, and I wouldn't say Yao Ming did, but that was on backs of, like, all the China votes. And so, yeah, LeBron didn't make it. I think LeBron should have made it. He didn't make it. Carmelo didn't make it. So a lot of guys don't make it in a rookie year. But Ben Simmons came out Thursday and was like, you guys didn't pick me this year. That's never going to happen again in my entire career. He dropped 32-11-7 on the road against the Bulls, who have been, you know, been pretty cool and pretty decent. Bobby Portis had 38 points for the Bulls. And Ben also clinched, hit some two clutch free throws to actually win the game. He won the game at the free throw line. And we all know he has issues shooting at the free throw line as well. But Ben came out strong. So it's going to be fascinating to see how both guys come sort of like end the season. But the Sixers are definitely in that playoff hunt. So too are the Jazz in the West. So it's going to be interesting Rookie of the Year race. Really tight on both fairly decent teams.
I mean, I'd be surprised if Ben Simmons doesn't win it. I mean, considering he was an all-star conversation, he really is like a walking triple-double, as we've called him before in the show. I really do think he should win. But, I mean, I know it remains to be seen. The storyline I want to get to before we don't, is Kawhi. I'm so mystified by the state of things in San Antonio because, to me, it feels like that's the team, that's the organization you can set your watch to. And this season, they're still playing incredibly well without him, which is wild. But there have been two little behind-the-scenes peaks that were really kind of shockers. One was the news when Pop revealed that for the first time in 20 years, he had a player request a trade, which was LaMarcus Aldridge. And because he's Pop, he said, that's not happening, let's make it work. Yep. And they made it work.
Yep.
Pop being the coach that LeBron James says is the greatest coach of all time, just for the record. Multiple times he said that. Anyway.
Yep.
Kawhi now having this strange, like an extended absence over some sort of quadricep tear, I think it was. And now, even though he's been medically cleared to return from a right quad tendinopathy injury or tendinopathy. Okay.
Yep.
But he's elected not to. And I don't know what's happening. In an interview, Pop said that realistically, he wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't return. I don't have the bat phone in this room, so I can't get Kawhi or Pop on the phone. But I just am curious what this portends for the future of Kawhi and for the future of San Antonio. It's so weird to me that this wouldn't just be, I mean, is he just being extra cautious? There were rumors of a rift with him in the organization, which seems implausible. What's the scuttlebutt over there, Tunde? What are your thoughts on this?
My sources, which I have zero of, I just have takes, man. It's got takes, but it's fascinating, and that's really what it is, right? And you're seeing NBA Twitter going off about what Kawhi trades, Kawhi leaving the free agency, this, that, and the other. It's so fascinating to me because, Kawhi is this really quiet guy. I mean, think, okay, he works in this, San Antonio side of things. But like you said, it's hard to talk about it just because we don't really know what's going on. It's like the most difficult thing to like really discuss, right? When an injury happens, the extent of an injury, how certain players are impacted by injury. And then you don't even want to get into the conversation when injury versus being hurt, because that's also a conversation. And we just kind of like gasbag about it without necessarily knowing like the actual details. So it's really tough. So this is a broad overview. I just find it weird that it's a testament to, I don't know if it's a testament, I don't know if it's a good thing, But it just shows you how San Antonio rolls, right? No other star in the league would this be happening to, where it's like we go there almost the entire half of the season without him, first half of 50 games in, and then Pop just casually drops the news that way. Like, that would never happen. Like, in a weird way, we've kind of forgotten about Kawhi this season. Like, just kind of forgot about him. And then this, we remember him now.
And that's just a testament to the outrageous successes. You know, that's just a testament to the skills of, like you're saying, that squad and that coach. I mean, he has the Spurs. I mean, right now they're tied for third, basically, in the West.
Yeah.
In a strong West. The Timberwolves are right there. The Thunder are you know, climbing up the rankings. It is also like to the East point too. Like, you have Gordon Hayward out, you have Kawhi out. It's interesting seeing these teams and what's the commonality. In Boston, you have another dominant star, of course, but the commonality here is these are seemingly two of the most, I mean, Pop is without a doubt maybe the most respected coach in the league.
Yeah,
but Brad Stevens is gunning for, you know, one of those top tier spots. People really speak glowingly about him too, and, you know, system and culture. And honestly, that actually brings me to the other side of the coin that I wanted to talk about before we go today, which is using my obsessiveness with the Knicks as a point of entry into the tanking discussion. Because the Knicks last night pulled out a win against their fellow tankapaloozers, the Orlando Magic. And yep. I got a text from a friend today, Dave Hartley, a longtime friend of the show. What's happening, Dave? He wrote me asking, you know, he wrote our group chat, like, does the Knicks win elicit any emotional response at all now? And for me, I was like, well, fury. And then I was like, no, honestly, confusion. And the existential confusion of rooting for a team that's tanking, it's very bizarre. And like, the question I face now is, do you watch the games? Do you just refresh the box score on your computer once in a while? You know, like, got to hit bottom before you go up. I mean, what would you do if you were an avid fan of a tanking team, or a team you knew should tank, and that if they win, you're upset?
Well, this is part of the reason why I try to stay away from fandom and being an avid fan. So, like, there's no NBA team. I'm like, oh, that's my squad.
You stay above the muck. You transcend. You leave me here to deal with all the shit.
I did grow up, I remember, you know, being a big soccer fan and being a big Manchester United fan. Shout out to David Beckham. And so, like, you know, we're actually not having the greatest season. That's Manchester United.
No, you're allowed to say we. It's your team, say we.
On that side of things. But here's the thing with the whole tanking discussion. Like, the Sixers did it right for a couple of years, right? Like, you want to get people excited for the youth.
But they got hosed.
Team.
They got hosed, and Sam Hinkie got run out of town.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they did it a couple of years too long. But in terms of, like, just if you take it as a single season, the whole idea is, like, have a player that excites the fan base. They're young, you know, they're not winning, but at least you're just excited watching this player's growth, right? That player is going to get buckets. It's probably like Devin Booker 2 years ago, right? Whereas opposed to this year with the Suns, it almost seems like Devin Booker himself is just kind of tired of the situation. Because if you do it too many years in a row.
That's a good point, because Embiid is out there saying, trust the process. My nickname is the process. Like, he branded, he helped to co-brand the experience. Yep. And I think what you're hitting on is important. You need a figurehead who's willing to embrace it. But my confusion here is, then you have the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, saying, he's quoted as saying, you know, I told the guys the best thing to do is lose. Boom. 600G fine, I think.
Yeah.
So it's a funny thing. Like, the left hand can't know what the right hand's doing. It could happen at an organizational level, but not at a player level.
It has to be understood. Yeah, it just has to be understood within the fan base.
The open secret. Yeah.
Exactly. And you have to have players out there who are trying, because either it's a young player trying to get better for next season, or just, I mean, look at the Sixers. Robert Covington came out of the whole tanking mm-hmm. for multiple seasons with the Sixers. Like, I mean, the Sixers are not doing that. I mean, he's turning such a good player now that I'm sure he'd have found a way into the league in some other fashion. But that's he really, you know, gained from this couple of seasons of just really trying to make a name for himself, trying to carve out a space and a niche for himself in this league. And now he's a great 3-and-D guy who can hit it from deep. There are definitely some gains to it. You just, like Mav did, Cuban did. You just can't come out and be like, okay, this is what we're doing, because it just looks bad for an entire league. Steph, I know we got to go here in a second. Can I get 1 minute to talk about Black Panther in a non-spoiler fashion, because I know you haven't seen it?
No, of course you can. I just want to say one thing before we pivot off the Mav situation, the Mavericks. I know John Wertheim and Jessica Luther just put out this huge report about a lot of disruption and sexual harassment and deep, deep problems with their organization. Yep. We don't have time to discuss it today because we're at the end now. And honestly, I don't want to discuss it before I've read everything about it, but we are going to talk about it on the show. I don't want to just gloss over that because that's really heavy shit and it's serious problems. And we will be talking about it. I just wanted to put a pin in that. But on a much lighter note, I do want to hear you talk about Black Panther, please. Lay it on me.
All righty. So really quick, again, no spoiler review. This is the best way I can put this is I'm a big Lion King fan because, you know, obviously you watch that as a kid and you just get fully engrossed in the Lion King and everything. I've seen it. I've seen every version of that movie, right, from theater, Broadway. I've seen it all. I even saw the sequel, right? The best way I can, you know, praise Black Panther is that if I was an 8-year-old kid, this could very easily be my Lion King, my new Lion King. It creates a world and a cast of characters that are so lovable and are so rewatchable. So everything from the storyline to characters to the music of this movie, from what Kendrick Lamar did to the score of this movie, both albums are in the top 100 in Billboard charts, is remarkable. So I know, Steph, you're going to see it this weekend. Definitely do. And let me know your thoughts, but I think it's really awesome. I do also want to point out some quick NBA parallels here, or just NBA connections, so to speak. Harrison Barnes and Rajon Rondo are one of a couple of NBA players that bought out theaters for kids.
They're the coolest. Watch Black Panther.
So awesome.
But I keep seeing screenings happening like this. Like I saw Desus and Mero yesterday, and I know they were involved with some screenings. Yeah, I just think it's so cool. People, you know, just people getting so fired up about the movie that they want to make sure everyone can see it.
Everyone's seeing it. Yeah,
dude, I have with the madness of All Star, I didn't get to see it. I came back here, and now I'm spoiling myself where I want to make sure I see it at the one true IMAX theater in New York, which is on 68th and Broadway. It's huge. Yep. So I've been waiting to make sure I go there, and so I will report back next episode, probably tearfully. About how great it was. We got to run. I hate to say it, but listen, again, call the hotline 323-736-1703. Leave your messages on the Open Run hotline. We'll get to them. Tweet us at Open Run. Tunde, remind them your social handles so they can find you.
At Producer TD, if you want more hot takes, or right now really is more about Black Panther takes. I'm all for it. I'm here for all for it. At Producer TD.
There it is. All right. More soon, everybody.
For more Open Run, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or visit openrunshow.com. And if you like being in the loop, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Open Run.